Tell you, Wednesday night, we ended the story of Samson when he dealt a pretty heavy blow to the Philistines at his death by collapsing their temple and so forth. But of course, we know that's not going to be the end of the Philistines. They're going to be around a while. In fact, I guess it's next Sunday, we'll see them dealing a rather severe blow to the children of Israel, capturing the Ark of the Covenant and so forth. But today we'll be moving from the book of Judges, as Freddie indicated Wednesday night, jumping over into the first few chapters of 1 Samuel to look at the last two judges, Eli and Samuel. 1 Samuel 1 through 8, I believe, is what we'll be covering today and next Sunday, Lord willing. Okay, and then I guess it's the next couple of weeks from now, we'll come back to Judges and cover one more story, and then we'll go to the book of Ruth. Now, let me back up here. It's always nice to look at your slides before y'all get to see them, and I don't do that always. So sometimes they're out of order. Okay, but today, as we begin our study of Samuel, we see that his father, we're introduced to the family of Samuel in chapter 1, said he was from the mountains of Ephraim. And I guess the question that was asked, was he really from the tribe of Ephraim? And the answer to that is no. You go over to 1 Chronicles chapter 6, we'll find out that he was actually a descendant of Kohath, the tribe of Levi. But how is he living down, or how is he described as being from the mountains of Ephraim? And so I'll go back to the map. If I can get back to the map, come on. I got it on, but it's not okay. There we go. Okay. So his home was located in this area here in the hill country of Ephraim. Now later on in chapter 2, we're going to find him going to his house in Ramah, which is actually down in the edge of Benjamin. And we'll also note that the tabernacle was at Shiloh, which was in the countryside of Ephraim. But last quarter, I guess it was, if you remember, when the Lord was talking to Moses about who would divide the land and so forth, he said that Eleazar, the high priest, Joshua, and the princes of the various tribes would be the ones to divide the land. And in chapter 35 of Numbers, talks about the fact that these Levites would actually just inherit cities within the various lands among the tribes of Israel. So as the land was actually being divided in Joshua chapter 21, and we talked about that this quarter, we see the leaders of the Levites actually coming to Joshua and reminding him of what the Lord had told Moses back prior to them coming into the land. So you remember how that the Levites were actually given 48 cities within the other tribes' territory, including 6 cities of refuge. But if you go to Joshua chapter 21, beginning in verse 3, it talks about Israel doing as the Lord had commanded and verse 4 of chapter 21 of Joshua, it talks about the people of Kohath actually receiving 13 cities from Benjamin, Judah, and Simeon. They received 10 cities from the tribes of Dan, Ephraim, and this half-tribe of Manasseh. So, obviously, Elkanah's ancestors and so forth had inherited or been given one of those cities in Ephraim. But I say all of this to say this. I want to establish the fact that Elkanah was a Levite because, as we see in the lesson today, his son Samuel will actually begin to minister in the tabernacle. And then next Sunday, we'll see him actually offering sacrifices for the people. So he had to be a Levite to actually do that. So I hope that's not killing too many birds with one or two stones, but that's why I went through all that jargon. Hopefully that'll help. But back to the story though. Elkanah had two wives, Peninnah and Hannah. Problem that existed was that Peninnah had sons and daughters, and Elkanah had none. And that created a problem just like it did when we looked at Leah and Rachel back during the days of Jacob. So every year we find Elkanah going up to Shiloh, and that's where the tabernacle was located, to worship. And at that time he would give Peninnah and her sons and daughters a portion of the sacrifice. And he would give Hannah, though, two portions, because she had no sons and because he loved her very much. But the thing that didn't go away was the fact that this wife, Peninnah, not just make a casual comment about the fact that, Hannah, you don't have any children. She actually taunted her. She provoked her, even to the point of causing her to weep bitterly, not even being able to eat a portion of the sacrifice that had been given to her. So, sometimes those of us who are husbands may forget some things that are not such a big deal to us, a big deal to your wife, and you best be listening up, and I'm talking to myself. Because look at what Elkanah said. He's trying to appease her by saying, why are you so sad? Look, you got me. I'm better to you than 10 sons. Now, Jeff, just because Tammy's got you, that don't mean she's going to always be happy. There's some things that are important in her life. And you know that. That might not be such a big deal to you. Oh, yes. This was a big deal for a woman to be barren. Right. So, it really caused a problem here and had caused a problem, as I indicated earlier, in the past. So, on this particular occasion, though, after the sacrifice meal had been eaten and so forth, we see Hannah actually going into the scriptures here uses the word temple. Actually, we know it was a tabernacle because a temple was not built until later. But really, she's going into the place of worship, which was the tabernacle. And we see Eli sitting by the door. And she's there weeping, praying to God. And during that prayer, she makes a vow. And she promised Jehovah that if he would give her a son, then she would give him back to him. And he would be a servant of the Lord throughout the remainder of his days. And we see again the promise that no razor would touch his head. And we talked about that fact relative to Samson last week. So he's under the Nazarite vow, not having his head shaven. So as Eli watches her, he sees her lips moving, but he doesn't hear any sound. So he makes the assumption or jumps to the conclusion that, hey, this woman's drunk. But she's not drunk. And she explains that. And look down in verses 15 and 16 of chapter 1. And she's very respectful as she responds to Eli. And she says, "No, my Lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto." So he accepts that explanation, and in fact, he expresses his desire that God will grant her request. So again, I guess a little side lesson is sometimes things aren't the way we see them, maybe up front. And we need to be careful at jumping at a conclusion which might be the wrong conclusion, as he did. But, of course, I would say that's just kind of a side note. But he does recognize after she talks to him what she has been doing, and he tells her to go in peace. And hopefully God will grant your request. And as we continue our story, we see that, sure. Yes. Right.
She had great concern for 16 months. As forlorn as she was, now, the Bible said, you go on the same. She let go. It's a great challenge for me. But I think that's the evidence of prayer. For your heart, as much as you can. That's what it is.
So Jeff is right on the top of this very chart right here. She returned after worshiping. We see her countenance change. She's no longer a sad, distressed person. Psalms 55:22. Cast thy burdens on the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. That's the point, Jeff, if you all did not hear that. That's the point he was making. After this woman prayed to God, put her request before him, she was a changed woman. She let go. She put it into God's hands. And we see a different woman in verse 18. That's what we saw coming up with that. So, that's a lesson that we need to learn, as Jeff pointed out. Right. Shows her faith. She said it's in God's hand. Whatever he wills, that's going to happen. And his will was that she conceive and bear a son, and his name would be Samuel, which means heard by God, or she said, because I have asked him of the Lord. I think that's in verse 20. So that's why he was named Samuel, because I have asked him of the Lord. And it said, after that, Elkanah would go up each year as he had before to worship. But look at Hannah's response. She said, I'm not going to go up until this boy has been weaned, and then I'm going to go up with him, and I'm going to place him into the service of the Lord. So Elkanah, though, has a little bit of warning. He said, okay, but what? But remember what you have promised the Lord. Verse 23, only the Lord established his word. So the woman abode and gave her son suck until he was weaned. So again, there's another lesson for us. When you vow a vow, Proverbs 5, verse 4, defer not to pay it. James chapter 5, verse 12 says, we're not to swear, but let our yea be yea and our nay nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. So whatever we say we're going to do, we best get on with it. We're bound by our word. So we see Hannah being bound by her word. She does as she has promised after she weans this young boy. Then she goes ahead and takes three bulls, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and goes up and offers the sacrifice and gives this child to Eli. How long has it been since Eli saw her praying and assumed she was drunk? We don't know. But it's got to be several years. Because this young lad is old enough now to be kept in the company of this priest. So she explains to him who she is and why she's leaving Samuel there. Look at verses 26 through 28 of chapter 1. So she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord there. So she kept the promise that she had made to God concerning this particular boy. So, again, I don't know how long it's been, but she seems to feel the need, at least, to explain to Eli who she is and why she's leaving this boy here. Of course, Eli being old, and I can appreciate that. I can't remember my name some days, let alone what happened a few years ago. Okay. You got a comment, Fred? We're going to see that pretty soon. He is actually going to be ministering in the tabernacle there. No, he's not a 1 or 2 or 3 year old kid. No, he's a young lad by this time. Okay, as we get into chapter 2 though, the first 10 verses, we're going to see a prayer by Hannah. And during that prayer, particularly verse 2, she talks about the power, the holiness, and the salvation of Jehovah. Verse 3, she talks about the proud and mighty are brought low and the humble are exalted. And this may have been referring a little bit to those two women, Peninnah being proud and mighty, quotation marks, she being humble and so forth. But the last, in verse 5 particularly, I think, she may be slanting that toward what has happened. So they that were full have hired out themselves for bread, and they that were hungry ceased, so that the barren hath borne 7, and she hath many children who is waxed feeble. But in verse 10, the latter part of that, we see a reference to our Messiah, because it talks about the Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointing. But as this prayer ends, it says, now Elkanah went to Ramah, to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. So we see just what Brady mentioned happened. So, but now the scene changes, though, in the next several verses to Eli and his sons, and what fate will befall each one of them as a result of Eli's inaction toward his sons, Hophni and Phinehas. Because the text tells us that they were very wicked in more than one way. The first thing that we noted was the fact that they were not collecting their portion of the sacrifice in the correct way. They should have been taking the flesh hook with 3 teeth when the meat was being cooked and so forth, drawing out that portion. But they were not doing that. They're even starting before the sacrifice is even being offered and saying, hey, give me my part right now. And if they were denied, then they actually took it by force. And things got so bad that men were actually avoiding offering sacrifices to the Lord. Look at verse 17. It says, wherefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for the men abhorred the offering of the Lord. So things had really gone bad relative to Eli's sons. But then we shift the scene again back to Samuel. So while these guys are really messing up bad concerning God's commands, we find Samuel actually ministering to the Lord. And each year his mother would bring him a new garment, referred to as a little coat, every year. And as Elkanah and family would come, Eli would actually take time to give them a blessing. And he would say, Jehovah give you descendants from this woman. And during the course of time, we see Hannah actually having 3 other sons and 2 daughters. And the comment that's made, Samuel grew before the Lord. Now, the scene changes back again to Eli and him rebuking his sons. but he didn't do what he ought to do. By this time, according to verse 22 of chapter 2, Eli is a very old man at this point. So he calls his sons in and he said, I'm hearing some things that are not very good about what you're doing. I'm sure you heard about how they were, what they were doing concerning the meats being offered, and so forth. But now it said, look at verse 22. It says, and not only this, it said, they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So here they are, not only violating God's law concerning the sacrifice, but they're also committing fornication with those who were helping at the temple. Yes. That's right. Yeah. But and Randall points out that we have to be careful about a little bit of leaven in the whole lump. So we see not only these men sinning, but they were causing the entire nation of Israel, quotation marks, not every person, but generally speaking, they were causing the people to sin, as indicated there on the slide, the second one. They were actually, their influence was bad. But Eli, as he talks with them, he said, now think about this. He said, if one sins against a man, then God's going to judge him. But when you sin against God, who's going to intercede? Then he uses that big old word that we don't like to see. Sometimes it's a little word called if or but. But here he says, notwithstanding. Notwithstanding. Where is notwithstanding? Verse 25. Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. So God's going to take care of them. But they would not listen. So why Eli did not take the proper action, we're not told. Was it because he was very old? Again, we don't know. But he did not take the action. We're going to see him pay the price along with his sons. But look at the contrast between what has been said about these boys, men, and what's said in verse 26 about the child Samuel. Said he grew on and was in favor both with the Lord and also with the men. Does that sound like Luke 2:52? And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. Yeah. Pretty much the same general comment about Samuel at this particular time. But his sons, they did not listen to what their father had to say. So as a result, we see a man of God, a prophet, making the visit to Eli and rebuking him for not taking the action that he should have. And he goes back and talks about how God had even spoken to the tribe of Levi, even back in Egypt. And of course, we know that Moses was a Levite. His mother and father both were from the tribe of Levi. So God has gone all the way back and started preparing these people from the tribe of Levi. And later on, he even selects them out of all the tribes to serve him in a particular way. But Eli and his sons did not show the proper respect for the priesthood, and particularly Eli, in allowing his sons to pervert it. Because it said Eli honored his sons more than God. So as a result, we see God taking some action. Previously, at some point in time, he had said that Eli's house and the house of his fathers would walk before him forever. However, as a result of this, we see God changing his mind, and he says, at some point, I'm going to cut off thine arm, and the house of thy father, that they're not even going to be an old man living in your house. So he's going to take away the priesthood from the house of Eli. And he said, as a result, or as a sign of this, then Hophni and Phinehas will die in the same day. Now, if you turn over to 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 27, we can see, and that will be next quarter, or maybe the other quarter, we're going to see that this prophecy is going to be fulfilled. 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 27. So Solomon thrust out Abiathar, who was, in fact, a member of the house of Ithamar, from being the priest, that he might fulfill the words of the Lord which he spake concerning the house of Eli at Shiloh. And from the time that Solomon cast out Abiathar, then Zadok, who was a descendant of Eleazar, they would be the high priest from that point on. So this statement that is being made here in 1 Samuel is not going to happen immediately, but you can put it, money in the bank, Buford, it's going to happen. Not when, not if, but when. So we're going to see that fulfilled next quarter. Now, so as this time continues, it talks about the fact that God was not talking to mankind much at this particular time frame. It said the words of the Lord was precious in those days. Chapter 3 and verse 1. And he said there was no open vision. So, you know, like the way these things on my ears, I get excited and knock them off stuff. But we see him appearing to Samuel, even though Samuel does not recognize what is happening right up front. Talks about Eli now. He's actually blind, a very old man. He's lying down, and God speaks to Samuel, even though Samuel thinks it's Eli calling him. And so he gets up, runs to Eli, and Eli tells him, no, it was not me. And after this happened the third time, then Eli knew that it was God speaking to Samuel, and he said, the next time he says that, you say, speak, Lord, for thy servant here. And so it happened again, and Samuel told the Lord, speak, your servant hears. And so the Lord goes ahead and talks about the judgment that would come on Eli and his house, beginning at about verse 11 of chapter 3, Lord said to Samuel, behold, I will do the thing in Israel, at which both the ears of every one that heareth it shall tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all the things which I have spoken concerning his house, which when I began, I will also make an end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. Therefore, I have sworn unto the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice, nor the offering forever. In other words, he's saying, Eli, you had a chance, but you did not act appropriately. You did not restrain your sons. He could have at least. Why he didn't, I don't know. But he was the high priest. He could have at least kept his sons from serving as priests. What else he could have done to them, I don't know. But he had his chance. Samuel is afraid to tell Eli what the Lord has said to him concerning his house. But Eli says, son, I want to hear everything. He said, I pray thee, hide it not from me. And so Samuel told him every whit, and he had nothing from him. And Eli's response was, it is the Lord, let him do what seemeth good to him. So it's too late. Neither sacrifice nor offering is going to do any good. You had your chance, but according to chapter 2 and verse 29, it said, you honored your sons above me to make yourself fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of my people. He said, wherefore, beginning in verse 29, wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and in my offerings, which I have commanded in my habitation. So you had your chance, but you did not act appropriately. And from that point on, it talks about the Lord being with Samuel and all of Israel, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south, recognized Samuel as a prophet, and even the Lord appears unto Samuel at Shiloh and said, revealed himself unto Samuel. Yeah, we as parents have a responsibility. Not only to wait until they're grown, but we have a responsibility to start when they're the size of that one on the back seat back there. Soon she'll be able to hear and understand, and that's when you start, not when they're grown men or grown women. All right. Hey, we had to rush through, and I said before the class, I don't know why somebody divided the first 8 chapters of 1 Samuel.